Me and my friend Carter led a walkout at our elementary school on the 14th. I am here today to acknowledge and represent the African American girls whose stories don't make the front page of every national newspaper. Don't lead on the evening news. I represent the African American women who are victims of gun violence, who are simply statistics instead of vibrant, beautiful girls at full of potential. For far too long, these names, these black girls and women, have been just numbers. I'm here to say never again for those girls too.
When people try to suppress your vote, and there are people who stand against you because you are too young, we say no more. When politicians say that your voice doesn't matter because the NRA owns them, we say no more. When politicians send their thoughts and prayers with no action, we say no more. And to those politicians supported by the NRA that allow the continued slaughter of our children and our future, I say get your resumes ready.
6 minutes and 20 seconds with an AR-15, and my friend Carmen would never complain to me about piano practice. Aaron Feist would never call Kira Miss Sunshine. Alex Schachter would never walk into school with his brother Ryan. Scott Beagle would never joke around with Cameron at camp. Helena Ramsey would never hang out after school with Max. Gina Montalto would never wave to her friend Liam at lunch. Joaquin Oliver would never play basketball with Sam or Dylan. Elena Petty would never. Kara Lugren would never. Chris Hickson would never. Luke Hoyer would never. Marquin Duque Aguiano would never. Peter Wang would never. Alyssa Alhadaf would never. Jamie Guttenberg would never. Meadow Pollock would never.
I am a survivor. I have lived in South LA my entire life and have lost many loved ones to gun violence. This is normal. Normal to the point that I've learned to duck from bullets before I learned how to read. My brother, he was in high school when he passed away. It was a day like any other day. Sunset going down on South Central. You hear pops thinking they're fireworks. They weren't pops. You see the melanin on your brother's skin turn gray.
My grandfather had a dream that his four little children will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. I have a dream that enough is enough. And that this should be a gun-free world. Period. Will you please repeat these words after me? Spread the word!
Spread the word!
Have you heard?
Have you heard?
All across the nation.
All across the nation.
We
are going to be
a
heard voices, the young voices of an emerged leadership, not only across the United States, but across the world. This is from the historic gathering all over the world in more than 830 U.S. cities and across the world. We had people gathering to insist that governments do much more and very soon about gun violence. It's a demand that has been ignored for a very long time in the United States, just given, just minimal attention, not very high on the list of priorities in this country. On the day that more than 2 million people gathered across the country, the president was relaxing on his golf course at Mar-a-Lago in Florida. And other brilliant legislators took the time to wag an accusing finger at the demonstrators, saying, you know, why don't you do something a bit more useful? Don't you know that we're doing our very best? But we saw a remarkable thing, and we have to stop a moment and acknowledge it and embrace it and encourage it. For it indeed was a historic day. More than 2 million people across the United States and tens of thousands more in cities all over the world staged a coordinated populist protest demanding aggressive government action in closing loopholes in gun sales laws and more strictly regulating gun ownership. The protest themed March for Our Lives brought together several groups that had been working on gun issues for years. But the February 14th, 2018 massacre at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School in Parkland, Florida, in which a troubled former student killed 17 with an assault rifle before he was apprehended. That was the catalyst for more aggressive legislative action. The Stoneman Douglas students vowed to move legislators beyond their customary thoughts and prayers statements, which we routinely see in the aftermath of disasters. But what was very, very heartwarming was that we saw the emergence, and we continue to see the emergence of a new generation of leadership born literally under the gun. So we're going to celebrate them today and commend them for moving so swiftly to organize themselves all over the country, all over the world. Not just the high school students from Stoneman Douglas, but all of the groups seeing the logic of coordinated action and coming together on a common cause. And in the process, showing us old fogies a thing or two about taking your issues so seriously that you won't let anything stand in the way of your action and activism. It was so heartwarming to see this as the shared vision, the shared action. People who could not before, I mean, it took so much time to just even get this issue before the American people as an issue. They had to climb the hill of resistance, people saying, you know, yeah, we know it's a very bad problem, but because there was a perception that this so-called problem, which was really a national disaster, a national calamity, because the perception was that it mattered more to people of color. This was not a white American problem. So there was no sense of urgency about it. In fact, it was, you can say it was considered and still is considered in the legislative houses across the country, it's considered a black problem, a Latino problem, a poor people's problem. And there was no unified opposition. There was no unified action on it. And so it did not rise to the level of top priority. But in all these mass murders that we have seen that the complexion, both of the murderer or murderers and the victims, it's different. These are real people being killed by other real people. And the quagmire was, for the government, for the legislators, how do you begin the wagging of a finger of blame at a group that is so powerful or seem to be so powerful that it is not to be condemned in any way? The action, yes, you condemn the heck out of the action. But of course, that's not just the only problem here. The problem is that perhaps these massacres began to multiply because the silence in the halls of the legislatures across the country gave the impression that nobody wants to embarrass white America. Just last week, we talked about the other part of gun violence, which is very often it comes with a badge. And very often there is very little that is pursued beyond the fact that they confirm a death and they confirm that an officer of the law or officers of the law are responsible. But there is no insistence that these kinds of crimes be regarded as specific kinds of crimes. These are crimes of a system against entire groups of individuals. And whether one person is shot or several are shot, it is the environment that allows the country as a whole to regard this, as one of the speakers said today that we heard, as normal. So we have the grown-ups, the adults, basically operating in a conspiracy of silence about this tragic trend in our country, which is now well known across the world. It's a country in which even the average citizen is fascinated about the power behind the gun. And for different parts of our country, for different segments of our population, there are further actions that need to be taken to put this in proper perspective. The gun has a special significance in the history of the United States. Just today, we are learning that Remington, one of the centuries-old manufacturers of guns and other gun-type weapons, has filed for bankruptcy. But on the other hand, that does not mean that there would be fewer guns circulating. We really have to get to grips with the psychological grounding in the psyche of America as a whole about guns, what they signify to different segments of our society, how that came to be, and why this persistent, the refusal to acknowledge, the absolute refusal to acknowledge it, in the halls of power where the change is being sought. So I listened to the speeches. I watched the coverage. And there's very little, although there is some stuff to criticize, but I'm telling you this. In the scheme of things, this was an absolute, a very historic moment for all kinds of reasons. And we have to encourage the growth of this and the pollination of it all across the country and all across the world. But the United States, we cannot deny, is a special case where guns and gun violence are concerned. You would think that a president, well, of course, he got $30 million from the NRA to support his candidacy for president. But we should see how the protest this past Saturday should naturally lead into ancillary movements. We should really call to account a system that says it's okay for an organization to feed a candidate or a candidacy millions and millions of dollars and still with a straight face, maintain that this is not undue influence. That this, of course, has nothing to do with what shapes the priorities of the nation's legislative agenda. We should also note that we haven't seen in the so-called opposition parties, we haven't seen an intelligent response to it either. Just to say, well, we're against it, doesn't mean anything. It's like the budget. More than 2,300 pages in a budget, and nobody knows what's in it. Nobody's in a position to translate what is intended by this budget. Nobody has advanced an alternative budget. So now it would fall to the people, those who are aggressive enough, to go find the document and with limited experience in reading budgets and analyzing budgets, try and figure out what is actually coming down the pike. That's privileged information. And most of the items in that budget are like the U.S. legislative process and the state legislative process as regards laws on gun ownership and gun violence. We have no idea. We do know that those who pay the most into the system via support of candidates, they are the ones who are shaping policy. And they will not tolerate a tweak, not even a small tweak. And they literally, pardon the pun, they're holding a gun to the head of the chief of state. Which is why he feels okay going off to Mar-a-Lago and having a couple of rounds of golf. It is his statement, I don't give a damn. Come Monday, today, life goes on. But not after Saturday. And that was so wonderful. After Saturday, we have quite a few worried people because they have sent a signal, these people who gathered Saturday all over the country and all over the world, that they not only have a vested interest, they're moving on it. And they're not going to be content to be consigned to the herd of the masses who can't do anything to anyone. They've already sent that signal, a very bold signal. So let us from this moment on not assume that young people are powerless or that they don't know as much as we do. They seem to know quite a lot. They got this movement organized and with a focus, and they got people to turn out in the streets. You know how terrifying Saturday was to people who have been in elected office for a long time and who just couldn't find anything within their power to do about this problem. They're shaking in their boots. My sincerest hope is that they continue with this pristine energy, that it not become corrupted, that they go their way along the path that they are blazing and have blazed. They're redefining the democratic process. They're redefining party. They're redefining political movements. They are creating a new reality based on their direct experience. And this is extraordinary by any measure. Extraordinary. And therefore, they have put before us, the grown-ups, a whole bunch of challenges. It's no longer sufficient to just talk. And you yammer and you flap your lips because what you're saying sounds good. They've upped the ante. We don't want to hear what you think ought to be done. We want to know what you're doing. We want to know what direction you are taking in solving this problem. We want to know whether you will continue to be owned and whether you will continue to be servants of the power elite in this country. We want to know whether you understand who your allegiance should belong to. We want to know whether you have the guts to do what is right as opposed to what is expedient. And we're going to be watching you. And we're going to do everything in our power to dislodge you when you prove to be a traitor to the aggregate interests of the people. We will certainly do everything in our power to end your political so-called career. So we'll take this little break. By the way, I wanted to also let you know the music today is South Africa's Ladysmith Black Mambazo featuring Dolly Parton, who's one of my favorites, with Bob Dylan's Knocking on Heaven's Door. From Ladysmith's 1999 album, The Star and the Wise Man. Let's talk about what we saw and what we interpret as this movement announced itself so impressively over the weekend, and what we think will happen in the near future. And what do you think this means for other fledgling or frustrated movements that just can't seem to get solid footing? We'll talk about that and other things at 888-874-4888 after the short break.
Off of me, well, I can't.
listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM. I'm Eutrice Lead. And we're talking generally about your impressions of this massive showing, the March for Our Lives, over the weekend, specifically on Saturday, and other marches that are contemplated, as well as organizing efforts contemplated. What do you think what is your impression of it, and what do you think it would lead to? From Orlando, Tony, you're on the air.
Hi, Eutrice. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you for calling.
You're welcome. I personally believe that the demonstrations that were held this weekend, it's a positive step going forward. But as you know, I've called before and I express my opinions as to what the whole Second Amendment right is all about and why people feel so strongly about it, given past history and current events. But I think that as we saw with Remington, I think the best thing we can do is not purchase guns. Let's put these gun manufacturers out of business, force them to nationalize it, and then the blood will be on the government's hand truly. Because it seems like they want to take a hands-off approach. And as you can see, it doesn't take much for these gun manufacturers to go out of business. Gun manufacturers in this country rely on the black market of illegal gun sales and for us to kill each other on our city streets for them to make a profit. And we need to stop buying guns. That's what we need to do.
Well, like all things, it sounds plausible, it sounds doable, it sounds logical the way you outline it. But that's not the way it works in real life. The reason we have stop signs is because people are not inclined on their own to stop and exercise a little bit of safety. And untold numbers of people have died because people refuse uniformly to exercise common sense. And even with stop signs, they're inclined to just break the law. Here we have a situation which is beyond the business of individual decision, but it has to do with how the extent one individual with an assault rifle, the damage that person can do. And we seem stuck because the legislatures, the various legislatures across the country, will not aggressively articulate laws prohibiting that. So what do you do? Do you leave it up to people's discretion, or do you see that government has a direct responsibility to step in here and control something that is so potentially dangerous?
But Eutrice, if the government is not going to regulate these guns and allow for these gun owners, because the way I see it, you have privileged people in the United States of America that love to exercise their Second Amendment right. Unfortunately, the spillover effect, because see, I feel for the people that, you know, that died at, you know, in Parkland, but I feel more for the untold stories of the people that are dying right now from gun violence in the United States. You know, there's more people die from gun violence every single day, and nobody talks about it, you know. And those guns are not forged in somebody's basement. Those guns were sold, manufactured by a gun manufacturer. They were sold by a gun dealer and then purchased, did a background check, what have you, and then they end up in the black market because of the weak gun laws that we have in this country, because they don't regulate the sales after the fact in many states. So you have states like California that have really strict gun laws. When you purchase a gun, if you were to give it away or resell it, you have to go through a dealer in order to do that. In most states, you don't have to do that. I believe there's only like 11 states that require that. Now, you know, there's so much illegal guns in this country. That is a big problem. And like what you were saying before, while we're killing each other, okay, they don't care. It's very silent. But when something happens in an affluent community, then it becomes headline news. It's very similar to the opioid crisis. See, before, when colored people were being dying of crack cocaine and heroin in the streets in the Bronx, nobody cared. Matter of fact, they said, let them die. That's less of them, hey, the better. You know, they treated us like garbage, right? We're dying of AIDS. Well, that's a gay, you know, homosexual disease. The heck with it. But once it comes into their home, then, oh, now it became an opioid crisis. You know, once one of their children died of AIDS, oh, now we need to, you know, it's not a gay disease anymore. Anybody can get affected by this. You know, remember the little boy that got the blood transfusion? It took him to open everybody else's eyes and stop being ignorant about the situation in order for people to become informed. And it's the same thing with the guns. You know, the problem, I mean, I know that 17 people that died is a problem, but there's a bigger problem, a bigger untold story that's not being told because no one cares about those folks, you know, and we need to address that. And like I said, I got a clean record.
Do you see this emerging movement also making a very strong attempt to do exactly what you say, which is to open it up and pull the wool over people's eyes so they understand that it isn't just about Parkland and one guy shooting and killing 17 people. Yes, in the specific, strict instance of it, that is the truth. But they understand as well. I mean, there have been so many mass murders already this year, outside of schools, also in schools, but also outside of schools. So what they're saying is, we are not going to allow this, exactly what you just said, we're not going to allow this to be a national secret anymore, but we are going to, you know, remove the wool from people's eyes, and we are going to insist on a smarter, more intelligent way to address it. And we're going to insist that laws be made that protect the safety of the people.
I believe, I hope that, you said earlier, that they keep up this movement, because the thing is that what the Republicans are trying to do, they're trying to remain silent. Now they've gotten so bold. Matter of fact, I'm going to take that back. They're not being silent. They're being bold to attack the victims of this violence. Because, see, now what they're saying is that all of this movement obviously is being paid by someone, you know, and what they're trying to do is lump it up as some left-wing conspiracy, and this way they can attack it. I believe it was Rick Santorum went and attacked the kids and told them they should learn CPR, you know. And basically, so what the Republicans initially tried to do was isolate this as some sort of soft target issue. It's not a soft target issue. You know, whether it happens in the school, in the post office, or what have you, or standing in line waiting to get on a ride at a Great Adventures or Disney World, you know, the problem is the weapons that are loosely available for people to perpetrate these acts of murder. and you know, and we have to take. I see a lot of the right wing of this country. They have these idiotic ideas as far as arming teachers and whatnot. But I don't see the leaders on the left coming out as strong and being vocal as far as like what we're talking about as the underlying issue when it comes to gun violence and the amount of people that die from it. You know, I want to see more like the people that we elect, you know, going forward, they got to be held accountable because Obama had the House and the Senate, you know, and they did nothing when it came to gun laws. You know, they wanted to ram Obamacare and all this crap. But when it came to the real deal, nitty gritty, let's get something going, push it and let's go. They failed on that. And then I don't want to hear them saying that, oh, we're against this and we're against that. When you got the power to do it, I want to see action.
Well, very well stated. Thank you for calling in and getting us started today, Tony. We go to all the way north to Buffalo. Travis, you're on the air.
Hello, my beautiful sister, Utrecht. How are you doing?
Okay, Travis, how are you?
I'm doing well. I can't complain. Thank you for asking. Well, my opinion, my humble opinion on the situation, it seems like, as with anything else, that it seems like we need white America to kind of validate our struggle or, you know, the situations that we are in, because like the caller said, this stuff happens in the inner city and it has been happening for a long time. And now that it is in America or white America's front yard, now it's a front page issue, and now it's a big deal. Also, like you said, I hope that, you know, this sparks a movement, you know, but it just seems like, you know, I don't want to sound, you know, like a pessimist or whatnot, but like it'll just be the same thing as with anything else. You know, it's a headline today, and we forget about it tomorrow. The only thing I see different with it is that now we have the youth involved. So hopefully, you know, they can keep the ball rolling. You know, us, not all but grown folks, you know, we kind of get lazy now and again. But, yeah, hopefully it sparks something good. And I also think that we are surrounded by, like, a culture of death. Like, almost everywhere you look, all everything that seems to be surrounded by death. But sometimes the music that we listen to, when we talk, listening to politics, and they're always talking about war and this, that, and the third. It seems like we have to change. I think it would be better that we focus on changing that culture, and this gun violence is just symptomatic of that. So that's my small piece.
Well, let's deal with the specifics. I appreciate your you know, the larger view that you put forward here. But let's talk about what happened on Saturday. What, okay, in your view, happened on Saturday?
In my view, what happened on Saturday was that, like I said, we got the youth involved. You know, and they are our greatest resource, which is they are our future. So
rephrase that. We did not get the youth involved. The youth got themselves involved.
Yes. Okay. Excuse me. Pardon me. Yes. The youth is now involved. Right. And like I said, they are our greatest resource. They are our future. So this, in my opinion, is very promising. Being that we got the younger generation to, not we, but, you know, they are stepping up and wanting to be heard and not just pushed aside. So, like I said, I hope that this sparks something and it continues to move forward. That is my only hope. Like, I hope that they continue, and this is not the only issue they venture out, because into economics, we got poor education and stuff like that. There hasn't from what I've seen, big outcry on that when it especially affects the inner city and, you know, the quote-unquote urban community. There's no big outcry. There's no walkouts. There are no marches in this aspect. So with this issue, you know, like I said, I hope it sparks something, and I hope that it becomes, you know, an all-inclusive thing and it just doesn't stop with gun violence or the curtailing of gun laws. Because in my also opinion, you know, I'm not one of those fanatic Second Amendment people, but, you know, I think it's an important a part of our reality, and we should be able to teach gun education, you know what I'm saying, and have people more so understand, you know what these tools are, what, you know, they should be used for, and things of that nature.
All right, Travis, thank you for calling in. We go next
to Cece
from New York. You're on the air.
Thank you so much, Chitrice.
What happened on Saturday?
Well, first I want to say that you're loved, liked so much, and appreciated. And I must say one other thing is that your music is rolling my socks up and down. Okay, so, you know, I have to just let you know that. It's wonderful. Okay, as I said in my previous time on, is that it's the younger elephants, and we need to recognize that. It's the younger elephants that they put the chain on, and the chain is broken. The chain, they broke the chain from the 14th of February, which was supposed to be so-called Love Day. And the older elephants need to get in check. We older elephants, and I'm even going to say my kid generation, okay, my oldest son is 51, my daughter's 47, and I have a 43. And they all have masters, they're all educated and so forth and so on, but they're also clueless. And they know that I know that they're clueless. And so many of us are clueless because we spoiled them by marching. I was at the original March on Washington. I'm so grateful to be able to watch the whole thing through. And so what we have to do is, I'm going to say a few R's, we have to realize, we have to relate, we have to respect what is going on and what they are doing. And we need to follow these young people. We need to, you know, we got our opinions, we got the armchair. I wasn't going to call in today, but I realized that we're not getting it. And we need to find out what can we do, give ourselves away, find out where young people are, find out where Never Again is, and get involved. It started. Let's realize it. Let's realize it, that we've got to, you know, if it's to be, it's up to me. We've got to get our sleeves rolled up and get involved. It's going on. We don't need to wait and see and hope. And it's happening. It's live. It's live. We saw it. We just got to be able to come out of the state that we've been in, and that is doing everything else but the action. The action is required now. And what I have to do is this Sunday coming up, this is definitely going to be first and foremost at a major family event. And so it's going to be bought up, and we're going to be looking for some commitments, some dedication, and some involvement in this particular opportunity. Waiting for and watching politicians, politics, I call it politics, watching that thing happen, forget about it. It's bought, sold, paid for. And so what are they going to do? There's no return. There's no return on the money. No one is going to return it. Their side is to keep it. It's our side that matters. I've always said we have the power. We always have. We don't believe it. We're thinking somebody else is going to do it for us. So if it's to be, it's up to me. This is what it's really about. This is what it's really about, is getting that going.
Psychologically, yes. I think we also have to go through, and we have to admit it, some people would be so uncomfortable about looking at 16-year-olds and 11-year-olds and 12-year-olds as leaders, but that's exactly what they are. And we have to adjust to a new kind of inspiration, a new kind of leadership, and not take it personally like he's trying to supplant us. No, this is just a new and a different way of affirming our power. And I know people are going to have a lot of trouble with that. Thanks, Cece, for calling in. Afia from South Carolina, you're on the air.
Good afternoon. Thank you for focusing on the dynamics of Saturday. As a person who was who's been an activist, was born into the movement. My parents were Garveyites, and who have been dealing with issues of violence in this country on a organized, conscious level since I was 13. Escalating from 17 when my sister, 16 when my sister was assaulted by Philadelphia, Pennsylvania police, knocking out her front teeth and breaking her glasses when we worked and successfully desegregated Girard College. And I thereafter went south to Georgia to work in the civil rights movement. I'm reminded as I watched this response to Parkland of the Mississippi Summer, Freedom Summer, where white students were recruited and brought to the South because we understood at that time, as we must understand now, that it's white lives that matter. And but for an assault on them, the rest of the world can go to hell, to put it mildly. I think that we're challenged to challenge young people and everyone else, for that matter, to engage a broader definition of violence. As bad and as unsightly and as painful as it is, the people who are killed by gun violence, by interpersonal violence, and I was glad to see that they included state violence as represented by the police, because it is violence. It's sheer licensed state-sanctioned terrorism. But as bad and as painful as that level of violence is, we have to begin to look at the spectrum of violence. And one youth from Chicago called it out when he talked about the lack of jobs, lack of school funding, the range of day-to-day violence that this commitment to holding on to their guns on one end of the spectrum, to the use of guns for survival on the other end of the spectrum, has to be dealt with and recognized as being interrelated. We must also not overlook the wars around the world that the United States is waging, the hot violence, the financing, and the provision. The United States is the world's leading gun supplier on the planet, has over 700 bases around around the world. All of that is violence, and there is no reason, as Sister Soldier said many, many years ago, and was smacked down by Bill Clinton at Jesse Jackson's Rainbow Push Conference, to think that it's going to stay in our neighborhoods and not spill over to yours is to not think at all. So the whole definition of violence and the response to it has to be significantly expanded. Martin Luther King raised that in his Time to Break Silence speech to Why I Oppose the War in Vietnam, when he called for a revolution of values. And that's the only thing that is going to change the level of violence and the manifestations of violence in this country and around the world. We cannot leave out the rest of the world.
Thank you for your considered opinion today. And, of course, we'll be discussing this as we go on. But it was just a moment for us to pause and to just take it in, the historicity of the moment and the potential of the moment to spawn similar movements and to give courage to those who are discouraged by the awesome power of the state to rethink that position. So I want to thank you very much for your contribution today. That brings us to the end of the program. Stay tuned. Coming up next, Meditations and Molotovs with Vincent Emanuele. Thank you so much. Great program. We'll see each other again tomorrow. I can't use it anymore. It's getting dark, too dark to see. I feel like I'm knocking on heaven's door. Knock, knock, knocking on heaven's door. I feel like I'm knocking on heaven's door. Knock, knock, knocking on heaven's door. Knocking on heaven's door. Cause I can't shoot them anymore.